What's better than one John?
Here's Johnny.
Nobody really knows. That's why we put two of them together. This is Canzano and Wilner,
a.k.a. John and John.
Welcome to an all-new episode of Canzano and Wilner, the podcast. I think we're going to title this one, You Gotta Play Hurt. I'm John Canzano. You can read me at johncanzano.com. He's John Wilner. You can read him at pac12hotline.com. I am coming off a knee surgery about 36 hours ago. I am on light prescription pain meds. One of the side effects of the pain meds, Wilner, hiccups. I am in the 1% of people who get hiccups. I would be a terrible prescription drug addict because I would just be walking around hiccuping all day long. So,
brutal.
Yeah, it's almost worse than the pain from the surgery. And you're
tell us about your surgery. What happened?
Well, I've had this is my fourth knee surgery, so this is not a bad one by my standards. I've ruptured both patellar tendons years ago, and then I had a microfracture surgery. This one was I just had a meniscus tear and. There was a defect on one of the bones, and so the surgeon wanted to go in and trim the meniscus and, fix the defect, shave it off the bone. And I was having a hard time. I was hobbling around, and I was not looking forward to going into, like, college football season or even the summer, not able to walk or run around with my kids. So I got it done. I was tweeting and texting you all the way up to the surgery, and it went well, and I feel pretty good.
And what is your recovery trajectory here?
He's saying 3 weeks I'll be able to exercise. So, he even told me, I had the surgery, Wednesday? He told me that I could get on the stationary bicycle on Saturday and just kind of lightly ride. So, if NFL players, they have these arthroscopic surgeries, they play 6 days later. So it's not that big a deal, but I'm on some crutches just for a couple of days. And you're under the weather too, man. Your voice, what's going on with you?
Yeah, just I caught a cold. I think I got it from my daughter. I'm okay. I'm not complaining here compared to you. Well, this is Michael Jordan had his flu game. This is your knee pod.
Well, we'll see how it goes. Forgive me if I say something outlandish. At least I'll have an excuse this time. Let's get into the draft, all right?
Well,
I was watching the draft.
To stay up like you weren't drugged up to the point of falling asleep during the draft, right?
No, I was tuned in, man. I was excited because I wanted to see where Caleb Williams, Michael Penix, Bo Nix, I wanted to see where these guys were going to go. And I was locked into it. And, give me an idea. Like, first of all, Caleb Williams at number one. How sure are we that Caleb Williams is going to be a great pro?
You know, with the quarterbacks, the sense of confirmation is never, you're never close to 100% with that position. You think about all the resources, all the time that's put in by the NFL teams to evaluating quarterbacks and how often they miss, even with top 10 picks. If the max for any other player of, sure they're going to be a good player is 100%, then quarterbacks, a ceiling is only, to me, like 80, 85%. You can't be more certain than that. And I think Williams is probably pretty close to that, but it'll depend on who the Bears put around him. I mean, they've certainly got a good start, but their offensive line is going to be a big piece of this.
Yeah, the 2021 draft is a great example of it. You had Trevor Lawrence, Zach Wilson, Trey Lance. You had Justin Fields in that draft. You had Mac Jones in that draft. Only one of those guys is still with the team that drafted him. That's 2021 to now. And so, and historically, quarterbacks, about 27% of quarterbacks in the Super Bowl era that were picked in the first round played and started more than four seasons with their team. And so it's a crapshoot, certainly at the top. Makes me think that, whoever was picking like around 5, 6, 7, 8 in the draft was getting real value. Because there was a lot of gambling going on, in the first three picks with quarterbacks going, and certainly some guys getting picked higher than thought they would get picked, and even in the 2021 draft, Wilner, I thought it was interesting yesterday as the draft's going down. Penei Sewell, who was I think the number six pick in that draft, he just got a $112 million contract from the Detroit Lions. He is a big part of their success. They went offensive tackle, not quarterback, in 2021, and I think they got value because of it. Penei Sewell might have been the best player in that draft, you know, when we look back a decade from now.
Absolutely. And it's also worth noting how often the best quarterback in a draft class is not the first one picked, right? I mean, Mahomes, not the first quarterback in his class. Josh Allen, not the first. Drew Brees, Tom Brady, obviously. Aaron Rodgers. I mean, very few of the best quarterbacks were the first guy picked. And that just, you know, that adds to the kind of the whole mystery about it. You think of the quarterback funnel in the sport and how many kids play quarterback in high school, how many tens of thousands of kids are playing quarterback in high school, and how many hundreds are playing quarterback in college football. And every year there's like 10 or 12 guys in the NFL that are really good. It is so hard and so difficult to predict. I just think the whole thing is endlessly fascinating. I mean, it's easier to be a brain surgeon than it is to be a high-level NFL quarterback.
I thought it was really interesting. I love the way Caleb Williams came out onto the stage. He was, you know, yelling. He was shouting, "Let's go!" And he's hugging Roger Goodell. And then in his interviews, I thought he did a really smart thing in that you know, immediate interview they do. You know, what are you going to do? What are you focused on? And he talked about getting to know his teammates. I think it was such a smart thing and such an easy thing for Caleb Williams to recognize. Now, I don't know if he got that from somebody, somebody told him to say that, or if that really comes from a good place. Regardless, I thought it was a great message to send to the rest of his team. If you're going to be a leader, I want to get to know my teammates' names. I want to get to know their families. And then I want to get to work. I just loved that messaging from him. And then you see Michael Penix Jr., a little bit of a surprise. The next Pac-12 player taken at 8 overall, he ends up going to the Atlanta Falcons. And let's talk about that. A lot of people upset that Kirk Cousins apparently did not know. Falcons doubling down with their quarterbacks. You know, what do you make of Penix at 8 to the Falcons?
Real interesting, but biggest surprise, I think, probably the first round. You know, there was a lot of talk that Penix was going to be a first rounder. Say that's come up in the last week or two. You know, he had a lot of momentum, April momentum, after being projected for the second round, I think, like back in February and March. To me, Penix is one of those deals where what we have seen for the last 2 years, you know, the untrained observers watching college football and watching him deal, we come to one conclusion, and it makes you just scratch your head when you see these NFL draft projections about, you know, guys being him being a second round pick. It's like, you know, if that's true, are the teams watching the same player that I'm watching? But him getting picked 8th is to me like the convergence of what I saw, which is a fantastic quarterback, and the NFL teams, at least the Falcons, agreeing with that. You know, we see guys all the time that are, you scratch your head and think, boy, he's not a 5th round pick. He should be a 1st or 2nd round pick. But this time, it's like the two things kind of lined up.
Yeah, I mean, he was on top of my Heisman ballot. I thought he had the best year. He made all the throws.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah, his deep. Yeah, you had him on top of your ballot as well?
Yep.
Yeah, so we saw that. But I think I still would have taken Caleb Williams 1. I would have put, I think Penix was the second best quarterback in this draft. And I think the Falcons did a smart thing. Like, they have kind of been, in the wake of Matt Ryan, they've kind of been flailing around, you know. They tried Mariota, they had Desmond Ridder, they've been flailing around a little bit. Now suddenly they are very skilled and very deep at the most important position. The problem that I have, though, is more of a organizational management issue. Like, you skip a step when you don't involve Kirk Cousins until the 11th hour. Like, he should not have been surprised by this, because my goal, if I'm drafting, is to solve a problem with my first-round draft pick. I'm solving a problem. And instead, the Atlanta Falcons have created a problem. And now they've created a little bit of, a problem with Cousins and his feelings. And you just don't want to start that way. And so I kind of wonder about the organization, even though I love the pick. Did, you know, and I don't know, maybe people listening to this are thinking about their own companies that they work for and going, yeah, this is exactly what my corporation would do or whatever, you know. But it just feels like Atlanta skipped a step.
It does. Did you see the video on social media of the GM trying to explain to Arthur Blank, the owner, why he did it? It's like, that did not look good. I'm of the belief that if you're an NFL team and you see, you think you have got your quarterback of the future, you do whatever it takes to get him because it is so hard to find that guy. But, you know, the issue with Penix, and you can see how they'd have like a Jordan Love deal where, okay, he sits behind Cousins for a couple of years, but man, by the time he's done sitting, he's going to be 27, 28. So that's a little bit different. And the other piece is, they paid Kirk Cousins $100 million. And did they need to use the eighth pick on Penix? Could they have traded down to, you know, 11, 13, 15, gotten him then and picked up, you know, say a third rounder as well? That seems like it would have been a more balanced move. But
yeah, I think that's the most important position. I kind of understand, you know, Penix is 23 years old. Cousins is 35. There's some time here. I just think you got to loop Cousins in. And apparently they had all these meetings with Penix. They brought the quarterback coach to him. You know, they were super interested in him. So if you're going to make that move there, I think that Kirk Cousins should not immediately go, I'm surprised by this. Because now you have some feelings and you have a problem you have to fix. But
yeah, they're probably worried that Cousins tells his agent and his agent leaks it to kill the deal. So it's tough. It's tough for the Falcons. But Cousins needs to suck it up. He's getting $100 million guaranteed. So
show business, not show friend.
That's right. That's right. What kind of odds could you have gotten before the draft though that Penix would be the first Husky picked? Right.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I had looked at that, and I think he was something like 12-1 to go that high, 15-1, something like that. It was with the very next pick, Rome Odunze at number 9, going to the Bears. So he gets paired with Caleb Williams. That is such an interesting pairing. He goes from Penix in college to Caleb Williams in the NFL. That's a win for Rome, and it's a win for the Bears.
It is. No doubt. It's Huskies' 2 top 10 picks. I believe that is the first time in the post-war era that it has happened. And then they ended up with a third first rounder. So that gives them the 3 first rounders, first time in a decade, right? Their offensive tackle, Troy Fontano, got picked. Where'd he go? 15, 16, something like that. It was, we saw Pac-12 players were going left and right in the first half of the first round. It was unbelievable.
Yeah, it was killing me because I was thinking about it, the same thing we were talking about with, you know, Washington gets to the CFP title game. We had a lot of Pac-12 teams ranked this season in football. And then you had, you had the number 1 pick in the draft, team in the title game. 6 of the top 15 players were Pac-12 players. And, you know, I tweet out, they couldn't get a deal done. And, you know, you hit it on the head. I mean, you know, had they just been patient and was it done the minute the LA schools left, Wilner, in your mind? Was the conference done the minute UCLA and USC leave to the Big Ten?
I don't think it had to be honest. But with the conference management, the strategy, and the group of presidents that all, you know, kind of that all made it very difficult. There's no doubt about that. But I think if they had different leadership, for sure it could have been done. We'll never know for sure. I don't think the fate was completely sealed, though.
At 14 in the draft, Talisi Fuaga, Oregon State's big offensive tackle, really good athlete, goes to the New Orleans Saints. Loved the emotional reaction. He was crying. Just love that. You know, I like it better when we get to see the players at home in their living rooms with their family and see who they included in their inner circle. I like that better than the green room shot.
Yeah, now I did not see Jonathan Smith there, right? but I certainly saw Dan Lanning was down with Bo Nix, right?
Yeah.
And Nix was picked, what, 12th?
Yeah.
by the Broncos.
And Knicks did something really smart. I don't know if you've seen the social media post, but you know, whoever his agent is and whoever is on his marketing team, they had a video already, showed him in his living room, had pictures of him from when he was like 10 years old all the way up through Oregon. And then they're playing a John Denver song in the background, and they get that video out right away. And it's just like, you know, the marketing of an NFL player who has a team around him is a really different thing and really smart thing. But landing in the room, you know, he's not going to miss that. That's like Brian Kelly being at the Heisman presentation, so he can get up and stand next to Jaden Daniels and, hey, I can put you in the NFL. And, you know, Jed Fish is selling that right now. I want to ask you about that, because so much of the push at Washington is, hey, we've got Pete Carroll, we've got Bill Belichick hanging around, we can get you to the NFL. What better evidence, or, you know, here's Exhibit A, even though Fish was not the coach, that you see Odunze and you see Michael Penix pick so high. We can get you to the NFL.
Yep. Well, and the other piece to that is that Fish's former player, Jordan Morgan, is a starting offensive tackle for Arizona. He went in the first round. So not only does the team Fish moves to have three first rounders, his former team had one. And that's particularly, I think, interesting for Washington, important for Washington, because the Huskies need offensive linemen desperately out of the transfer portal. And now Fish can go to those guys, the top guys in the portal, and say, look, I just developed Jordan Morgan into a first-round pick. Come play for me at Washington. So he's going to win both ends of the pipeline, his former team's draft production and his new team's draft production.
The rest of the draft, are there questions that or things you're curious about finding out here as the draft continues?
Well, how about Latu, the edge rusher from UCLA, going 15th?
Yeah.
I think he went to the Colts. First defensive player pick. That, to me, was just fascinating to watch. First 14 players selected all on offense. Never happened before. The previous record was the first 7 players drafted on offense. So this doubled the previous record. Incredible.
Do you think this is an outlier year? Or is this evidence that the game has become so offensive-minded that you've got to have quarterback, offensive tackle, wide receiver, dominant receiver?
I'd say, I'm curious to hear what you think, it's partly that the way the NFL game is played these days on the perimeter with receivers. And it's partly that it was a great receiver class. And thirdly, all the quarterbacks. So I don't know if, you know, I think it's a very good quarterback class, but six of the top 12 picks were quarterbacks. I think to me that says some of these teams are worried about the quarterback class next year too, and that not being very good, so they wanted to get their guys now.
Yeah, could be that. I also think, you know, you look at, there are other symptoms too, like the 49ers picking number 31. They go with a slot receiver who a lot of people, you know, 2 years ago would not have had anywhere near the first round. Everybody and the Chiefs moving up to take, you know, the fastest guy at the combine, and everybody declaring that a win. Very offensive minded first round in general.
How about the second pick and the second to last pick of the first round, both former ASU guys?
Yeah.
Jaden Daniels, former ASU quarterback, and Ricky Pearsall, former ASU receiver, both transferred. Daniels went to LSU, won the Heisman. Pearsall went to Florida. Good season. Good player. Was a good player at ASU. But ASU had a lot of talent, you know, for a couple of years under Herm Edwards. Of course, completely undisciplined operation. You know, led the country in penalties. Obviously led the country in NCAA infractions. Just tells you they recruited a lot of players, and to have former Sun Devils, two of them in the first round, also a little noteworthy.
Also interesting to see, you know, that fantasy football, you know, people drafting in fantasy leagues don't often pick running backs high anymore, because, you know, you can get a great back in the second, third, fourth round. NFL teams are now doing that. Along those lines, I am really curious to see where Bucky Irving ends up. Because there were times last year I thought Bucky Irving was Oregon's best player. And I'm curious to see how that translates in the NFL, because I do think he's the type of back that could fit in a Chiefs-like offense and catch passes out of the backfield and be a dangerous player. But, you know, some people have him as late as the fifth round, sixth round. Others say he's a second-round guy. I'll be really curious to see what happens with Bucky.
They got the Ducks have got, what, three or four guys who could end up going on day two.
Yeah. Jackson Powers Johnson is another guy that I thought he might go in the first round. And, he's a really versatile offensive lineman. We'll see where he lands. But, I think.
And Troy Franklin, right?
Troy Franklin's in there. I'll be curious. You know, I thought there was value, though, because, you know, all the quarterbacks went so high. So you get Penix up higher than he's expected. There's this run on quarterbacks. I thought one of the real winners were the Raiders at 13. They get Brock Bowers, who probably shouldn't be there. He should not have been available there. He should have gone, like, you know, top eight. And instead, you know, because everybody's going, well, we might as well take a stab at a quarterback, he falls to 13. I think the Raiders got a steal there.
Yep. Raiders coached by Antonio Pierce, the former ASU assistant who was the mastermind of all the cheating and the recruiting that got them Ricky Pearsall and Jaden Daniels. And he's now a head coach in the NFL with no worries in the world NCAA.
Did you watch the Belichick version of the draft, the Nick Saban version?
No, I watched
version?
NFL Network.
How were you
Network?
Watching?
I mostly watch NFL Network. I think it's better.
Yeah.
What did you watch?
I wanted to see what Saban was going to be like, so I watched that one, and he was really good. There were just some moments because he had recruited a lot of the players and he had coached against some of the players, and he was able to say, like, you know, and he was more critical than usually. Usually draft night is a big celebration of, hey, these players are all great, they're all hardworking, but, you know, there was an offensive tackle that was taken pretty high, and Saban said, I'm questioning why he only started 8 games. In the NFL, you're going to have to play hurt, and you're going to have to show teams that you can play hurt. And guess what? You're going to be lining up against other players that are just as good as you. And I think this guy got along for a while, you know, just because he was better than the people that he was playing against. So I there was some criticism that he offered that I think was fair, that also was a little more pointed than we're used to seeing. Now, is he great on air? He's not great on air, but I just thought it was interesting to kind of hear him talk, you know, maybe with a little bit of, a little bit more critical of some of the players that were picked.
It's going to be fascinating to watch him on game day next year. He is going to be a big part of ESPN's college football coverage going forward. I think they feel like he's a gold mine.
If he's candid,
he's going to be, it'll be fascinating.
He was, Amarius Mims went 18th overall to the Bengals.
Oh, yeah, the kid from Georgia.
6'8", but, you know, he played in a lot of games. And Saban out and out said, this is a guy who in college lined up, he was bigger and stronger than the people he lined up against. In the NFL, he's not going to be. He's going to need to get the technique, and he doesn't have the reps. And so it was really interesting to hear him talk in that way about a player and say, you know, let's see what he does. So we'll see.
So two numbers. I'll leave you with two numbers here before we go. One is 8. That's the number of Pac-12 players picked in the first round, which was one short of the conference record. The other number is 39, which is the conference record for number of draft picks since the NFL went to the 7-round draft 30 years ago, right? I mean, for a long time, it was 12 rounds, you know, 50, 60 guys picked. But since it went to 7 rounds in 1994, the conference record is 39 picks. That was set in the 2015 draft, which is also when the Pac-12 had 9 first-rounders. So that was the Marcus Mariota draft, right? Coming off of the 2014 season, Oregon made the championship game. Right, Arizona was in the Fiesta Bowl. I think there was either 5 or 6 teams ranked at the end of the AP and the end of season AP poll. A fabulous year, reflected by the subsequent draft. 39 players. So, if they can get, they need 31 more picks to tie the record. And the irony of that all happening as the Pac-12 football goes goes to bed, you know, just one more storyline.
Yeah. I mean, it just sort of underscores the idea that it wasn't about the players. It wasn't about the talent level. It wasn't about the fan bases. This is about 12 presidents who fumbled the ball up and down the field, two commissioners who were bumbling along with them, some media companies that wanted consolidation, and maybe some other outside forces, some other conferences that wanted it all for themselves. I mean, and that's the sadness of it. And
yep.
We'll get into more of that.
It kind of was. Yeah. It kind of was. I mean, if they had had the 2023 season had played out in 2022, yeah, I think they probably would have been okay. But it was the timing. Like, they had this great season after it collapsed, right? So
right.
You're right about the mismanagement, no doubt. If somehow they could have produced 2023 12 months earlier, maybe they'd be okay.
I had written prior to the Pac-12 championship game that the 12 presidents who were on the clock in August should have been lined up at midfield, and the Allegiant Stadium could have booed them. And and I had a Pac-12 president reach out and say, "You're absolutely right." And I thought that was interesting. I think they know it. I think they know that they blew it, and it could have ended differently. But we'll see what happens from here. And we'll be back with a new episode next week. You can read John Wilner at Pac-12Hotline.com. You can read me at JohnCanzano.com. We appreciate that you're here.
Thanks very much for listening, everybody. And John, my friend, I hope your recovery continues through the weekend, and you're doing well on Monday.
Yeah, and I'm just glad I got through this without hiccuping. Got it done. I was on my radio show yesterday, day after the surgery, and the first segment of the show, I have not listened to the podcast, but it was just basically me hiccuping and apologizing for 10 minutes. So glad we got through that.
Well, thanks, everybody.